The BBC presents My Music. A radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Hello and welcome to My Music. The contestants, Ian Wallace, partnered by Dennis Norden, and John Amis with his partner, Frank Miller. A little musical identification to start with. Ian Wallace, what is this and who composed it?
Resounding start.
It's a magnificent start to a symphony, I would think.
I can't name you the number, but I think this is by Schumann.
Yes, that's right. Do you have a nickname for the symphony? Like Rhenish or something like that?
Yes, put a bottle of that on the ice. That would sound very nice after the show. In other words...
It's a Schumann symphony, and perhaps when writing it he had in mind the number of witches in Macbeth, I don't know, or something like that.
Three,
the third symphony.
The third. By the pricking of my thumbs, a couple of marks by the way.
I must remember not to help the other side either. Two marks, Ian, for it was the opening of Schumann's third symphony, the Rhenish. Dennis, you imagine you don't know anything about classical music, but you do, you do. Dennis, when was that composed?
You want to know when? It was during his lifetime.
Right, yes.
I knew it was his fifth, but when did he write it?
Between 1803 and 1808, Beethoven was embarked upon his fifth symphony, I'm told. Oh, mark and a half for Dennis. John, what is this and who composed it? Yes, nice. Rather nice, yes. That's perhaps what he called his house.
By Hightor of that ilk.
Villa Lobos, yes. And the title?
It's called Bachiana Brasileira, number 5, I think.
Number 5, yes, that's right. And that always brings in the letters from people saying, what is it? And after the splendid way you pronounced it, I'm not surprised they're right to ask what it's called. I normally call it Bachianus Brasileiras. But it's by a man called Villa-Lobos. You look him up under V in the record catalogues, and you won't go far wrong. The singer there was Maddy Mespley. 2 marks to you. Frank, a two-part question. Who wrote the music, and what language is it sung in?
Voilà, fenêtre, merci bien. Où est la plume de ma tante chérie? Voulez-vous vous promener avec moi? Eine kleine Nachtmusik und viele Schnitzel mit.
An extraordinary record and a great favourite of mine.
Yes, it's a cod German, it's a kind of neo-German.
Well, it started as French and then it ended up in German, yes. The title John is giving
it's
you,
called,
I think.
Bach Double.
Yes,
back double,
it's a concerto, isn't it? Yes,
yes, I imagine it is. Yes.
Actually, yes, you've got them marked. Various dog languages put together by a very ingenious songwriter singer called Tom Springfield, Dusty's brother. It's called Night School, and he uses the only bits of the various languages that someone like me would know. For instance, this is how it goes on in Italian.
Minestrone e un poco di spaghetti bolognese, la dolce vita all'inglese, pericoloso di sporchi ma che era la Sofia Loren.
Very clever song called Night School and set to the music of Bach. You have 2 marks. Although only Frank and Dennis among our number appear in the series My Word, Ian and John would like you to know that they too have been known to read a book on occasions. Quotations.
Book,
quotations, then. Oh, here word, are some favourite sayings about music. The question is, who said them? Ian, who said, "You cannot play the flute merely by blowing. You must use your fingers too." I'll give you a hint. He must have said it sometime between 1749 and 1832. He probably said it in German, and the remark may well have been addressed to Mrs. Goethe.
If you hadn't said that, Steve,
we'd have been here all night.
I was going to say it was Miss Nicklin who said it, who was the music teacher at my kindergarten school. You know, she used to say that about most instruments. You know, you can't just play that by blowing it. You've got to use the fingers. So it was... Oh, it must have been Goethe.
Yes, it was Goethe. Gets you a mark.
What? I mean...
Don't push him.
I mean, what do you think drove him?
I think
to say
he said it for the same reason that your music teacher used to say it.
But Mrs. Goethe thought that you just had to blow it.
I think he was moralising, actually. Just moralising.
Demoralising. Oh.
Dennis, somebody once told a relative of his that playing an instrument puts a gentleman in a very frivolous light. Who wrote that, and did his son pay any attention?
Ah, oh, if he wrote it to his son, it's very likely to be Frank's mate, Lord Chesterfield.
Yes. And did his son pay any attention? No, he did not.
No,
that's right. Lord Chesterfield's advice to his son, mark to you. John, quote, "Sentimentally, I am disposed to harmony, but organically, I am incapable of a tune." I helped the other, so I think I better help you too. It was not one of his tales from Shakespeare. That's Frank's prompt.
He says Charles Lamb.
Charles Lamb is right, yes, Charles Lamb said that.
Charles Lamb was totally incapable of appreciating any music whatsoever.
Mm. Yes, one of those very, very rare people whose music was quite meaningless.
I thought you were going to say Schoenberg.
John Ruskin was also wasn't very fond of music. He said he listened to Beethoven, and it reminded him of a man emptying a bag of nails with an occasionally dropped hammer.
Frank, I think you'll get yours, not least from the rhythm of the words. "As some to church repair, not for the doctrine, but the music there."
It's a typical Augustan attitude. Yes. Alexander Pope.
Yes, that's right, from one of his essays on criticism, 1711. And a mark to you for that. One of my great personal friends is the pianist Rubinstein, Horace Rubinstein. He was a pupil of Parkman, Sid Parkman, and it's been poor Horace's bad luck, I have to tell you, to learn the musical repertoire from an edition which unfortunately contains a great many mistakes and misprints, which he might have known, actually, because on the cover it says, "Flagrant Hours with the Great Masters." Anyway, Ian, the question for you is this. I'm going to play a few bars of my friend Horace's version of the Grieg Piano Concerto. Can you tell me where he's gone wrong? Now, where did he go wrong?
But it's in the wrong order.
Yes, that's the best way to put it. I started... And I should have started... That's right, yes, 2 marks to you. Dennis, when Horace Rubinstein plays even 12th Street Rag, he gets it wrong. Now, where does he go wrong there?
Right at the beginning, but don't... I'm like Charles Lamb. Organically, I'm incapable of a tune, but I know he does it wrong. That's how it should go.
Yes, I think you've got it. I played, and I should have played.
Yes.
Upside down, in fact, yes. The second and fourth notes are inverted, 2 marks to you. John, when Horace took up the organ, he naturally played the great Toccata and Fugue in D minor. But even there, he was unfortunate.
Wit.
Ah, what a technical joke, yes. Because...
Ta-da-dee.
Yes, I played...
Ta-da-dum.
Yes, instead of... Yes, Bach would never have written, would he?
Well, I don't know whether he would, but he didn't.
Well, he didn't, no, that's right.
What did the mordant...
Oh, it's
not Norden.
It's Morden. It's an ornament in music known as a mordant.
Oh, I see. It's halfway between Muir and Norden.
Yeah. What I think.
You're not the only one who's asking it, tell you.
What I think is very nice is that Bing Crosby used a mordant about every 4 or 8 bars, and I'm sure if you asked him what a mordant was, he'd say, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Yes. Anyway, 2 marks to you, Frank. As an encore, or as Horace himself used to say, as a lily pop, he used to give his listeners a treat with the barcarolle from the Tales of Hoffmann.
You've never let your right hand know what your left hand do.
I may tell you, that is very hard to do.
I'm terrible. I suffer for you.
Yes.
If you were paid.
Yes, the vamp was inverted as you spotted. 2 marks to you, yes. Now for the next round, I'm going to play a few bars from a record of an instrumental piece and ask Ian first to identify the instrument. Then on to Dennis to tell us how it got its name, or perhaps how he thinks it got its name. And then similarly with John and Frank. Ian, what is the solo instrument here?
Playing very traditional music.
Downtown Bombay.
The sitar.
The sitar, yes, the sitar. Doesn't give Dennis much chance, but Dennis, how can you tell us how the sitar got its name?
Well, it's obviously Indian. It's obviously from the Indian peninsula somewhere. It's actually hill dialect. There was a village in the world. There was one chap whose family lived there. They were very comfortably off, or hill at ease, as they say. And except for the son, who was a bit of a layabout, and the father said, "It's about time you did something." And he said, "Well, I have." He said, "You've been doing nothing." He said, "You've been just hanging around." I said, "No." He said, "I've invented this rather ostentatious multi-stringed instrument." And the father said, "I don't believe that." And the son said, "Would you like to see it?" He said, "Yes." The son reached down beneath him, brought out something. He said, "See?" The father said, "Ta." And they suddenly paused in a moment of wild amaze. And that...
And that's... Actually, that's the correct answer.
It is.
You a bar.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, it's the correct answer, anyway. John, what is the instrument taking the solo here? Charming, isn't it?
I would say it's a euphonium.
Yes, it was John Clough, with a lip-splitting bit of the Carnival of Venice with the Black Dyke Mills Band. It was a euphonium. Frank, can you instruct us, please? How did the euphonium get its name?
According to Professor Jimmy Edwards, who is a virtuoso on this instrument,
yes.
It comes from the Greek, euwater, phony shocking on noise.
Will do, will serve for a mark. Thank you very much. And we move on to the next round and plunge boldly into the world of opera. Ian, could you please start the ball rolling by placing this scene for us?
That's the national anthem, that's the end.
where are they?
Well, this is Gounod's version of Goethe's Faust, yes. And that's the moment when Marguerite looks out
over the woodwind players with an expression as if to say, you don't just blow that thing, you use your fingers.
Fair enough. I was laughing while that was being played because it is the only bit of Faust that I know. I don't mean that I know to listen to, but it is the only bit in which I ever perform. Because Faust is not one of what singers are apt to call in that very proprietary way, one of my operas. But when you do operatic concerts, it's always a great thing to finish the concert with the trio from Faust. So I've had to learn that bit. It comes from the end of the fifth act, and I sing in that bit the part of Mephistopheles, who has, in the English translation, is almost unbelievable about horses panting in the courtyard below, and if it please you to stay, that is not my game, and all this kind of thing.
Also,
it's the end. It's the end of Faust.
Yes, two marks. And it's in
I heard about a performance of Faust in a small town in France recently. And you know that Mephisto, when he comes up, his first words are, me voici, et pourquoi la surprise? Well, he got a hell of a lot of laughs. And the trouble was that as he came up in the trap door, his tights, which was all he was wearing, caught on a nail.
Boom. Where were we? Oh, yes. Two marks to Ian Wallace, yeah. Dennis, here's a chorus from Faust. Can you tell me, after you've heard it, the calling or profession of the people we hear?
Yeah, there are six accountants, 13 architectural students, four comptometer operators, and a rifle range attendant, and they're all earning some extra money working for the local operatic society.
Can't deny that, actually.
Yeah.
Playing the part of...
I don't know, what are they playing? The
anvil chorus.
Oh, come on.
Yes, well, they're anvil chorus.
Yes.
Well, they're blacksmiths, aren't they?
The anvil Princess. Chorus. This will be the anvil chorus from Faust, would it? Yeah. No.
No.
I think something's gone slightly aglay here.
Ian, I can get them wrong on my own.
Look at your anvil.
Slight confusion. You're thinking, actually, it's the anvil chorus from Puccini's Faust, isn't it?
No.
Ian, have you ever heard this tune?
That's the anvil chorus.
Yes.
This is the soldiers' chorus, I have to tell
yes.
you. So it can really only be one mark out of two for Dennis, for being really... John, here's a sardonic serenade by a fiendish Mephistopheles. Not difficult. Who is the singer?
Oh, qui fête l'endormir, n'entendez-vous pas, n'entendez-vous pas, oh, Catherine, mamie, n'entendez-vous pas, ma voix d'aimer pas.
Sung in Franco-Bulgarian, I think. He used to be singing om bon pong the whole time, I think. Beautiful voice. Who was he?
Well, you gave it away, but in fact I did recognise our great Boris Godunov singer,
yes.
Boris Christoph.
Boris Christoph, yes. A good Mephistopheles, have you seen him as Mephistopheles?
Mm, well, he isn't doing it at the moment.
No, but have you seen him?
No, I've never seen him do it.
No, and it's himself on the record, anyway.
Did I ever tell you how I went to see him once to do an interview with him?
Oh, no.
And he told me to come at a certain time to the Savoy Hotel, and I got there, and they rang up for me. And I said, Mr. Christoph, he said, I'm reposing.
Like a ridiculous situation that can develop with Italian opera singers with the language difficulty in a theatre where I remember one time when the tenor in Tosca, we were doing at the Cambridge Theatre, was in his dressing room and was a little late. The performance was not coming through public address system in his room, so he didn't know that he was required. And the stage director from the prompt corner
rang his dressing room, and Tenor picks up the phone and says, as Italians do, pronto, which of course means ready. So the stage director in the corner said, grazie, and put the phone down. And this happened three times until finally the man goes up and says, you said you were ready. He said, yes, I'm ready to speak on the phone.
Frank, you're going to hear our heroine, Faust, in an unguarded moment. What could possibly make a woman react like this?
Tremendous lot of reaction, I suppose. It's the Jewel song.
Ah, yes.
Do you know that Gounod originally wanted to call the opera Getting Goethe's Garter? Anyway, it's Marguerite who's doing a scene nicked from Shakespeare where that lady with a name like a German car, Portia, is trying to tempt somebody with a casket of jewels.
Well, she herself is being tempted,
that's
isn't
right,
she?
She's
John,
being
actually.
Tempted. Well,
she's being tempted.
Tempted.
Yes, that's right.
And she's sort of looking at the jewels and being wistful.
And she holds one up and says, "Is it yourself, Marguerite? No, it's the daughter of a king." Things like that, she says.
Oh, I didn't catch the lyric.
2 marks. Regarding the singing with which we end each of these shows, personally, I've never managed to find Dennis's key. I'll keep trying. Perhaps the cast and orchestra of the film South Pacific can assist you, Dennis. For 2 marks, try to come in when they leave off.
We have nothing to put on a clean white suit for. What we need is what there ain't no substitute for.
There is nothing like it.
Well,
that goes like mad in siren system.
You were,
The fellow who sang it in the show never got a reception.
You're getting a marker word for that, practically. There is nothing like a dame. At least you knew the song, didn't you? Mm. Nothing like a dame. There is nothing. Can you give us any words just to get the extra mark?
There is nothing like a dame. Nothing in this world. There is nothing you can name that is anything like a dame. For nothing looks like a dame.
Yeah, et cetera. Thank you. Yes, 2 marks. Yes. John, the same show. And for you, a little French chanson to complete.
Dites-moi, pourquoi la vie est belle? Dites-moi, pourquoi la vie est gaie? Dites-moi, pourquoi je m'en vois.
Frank, to prevent you singing the entire chorus of Some Enchanted Evening, I thought I'd...
Why?
I thought I'd start you off in the middle, after the line, "Wise men never try." Here we go.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room, then fly to her side and make her your own. All through your life you will dream all alone.
Yes. 2 marks. Ian, I wish we had time for a full chorus of This Nearly Was Mine. Would you settle for 2 marks in exchange for the middle bit onwards? That's after a bit starting Close to My Heart She Came, I think. You know, I'll give you a key.
Close to my heart she came, only to fly away, only to fly like day flies from moonlight. Now I'm alone, still dreaming of paradise, still saying that paradise was nearly was mine.
And that nearly was a musical panel game in which the winners this week by 1.5 marks are John Amis and Frank Miller. Bye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Schreier.
You've been listening to My Music from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.